Welcome back, everybody. This is Sight to the Blind. I forgot to touch on this subject, but it came and went so fast, I figured it wasn't even worth talking about. But I'm going to touch on it briefly. The whole Klay Thompson and Megan Thee Stallion thing. The relationship is so funny because, you know, when they put these celebrities together, you know, they put them together knowing they're going to break them up. And just by looking at those two, it was all performative. Yet our people are so blind to entertainment lifestyle that they really think that these people step away from being themselves on platforms in order to have a normal and average life or romantic relationship life apart from who they are on these platforms. When the entertainment industry has shown us that it's a 24/7, 365 day identity. Like, that's what they gotta be. So they're not only selling you by when they're on platforms or on stages or on courts, they have to sell you a lifestyle. That's the main reason why Satan goes after anyone who's willing to sell themselves out for him, because he knows that he can control the image. That's what he wants. He wants full image. It's been long since the days of how athletes acted one way on the court, and then if you met them in person or around them, they were not who they were when they were playing sports. Or even if you met actors or whatever, that they're not who they are or weren't forced to be somebody different from who they are off screen. And now, because of social media, they have to keep people attached to an identity or an image. This is one of the reasons why I believe Satan wanted Moshe's body so bad, because he knew that he could lead the children of Yasharel without much work into whatever doctrine he wanted to lead them into. Because if you had the guy, before Yahusha, the guy that everyone listened to, that everyone knew that he was connected to the Most High Yah, that they will follow him wherever he would go. And him being dead, they'd be like, oh, he rose from the dead. Satan would have made it seem like he rose from the dead. So if Yahusha would have came, they're like, nah, somebody already did that already. Somebody already came and offered up their life for us. He led us to the promised land. So if Satan had his way, there's no telling where the nation of Yasharel would have ended up. But this is the reason why they have all these images and idols and identities now, or personalities online now, on screen now, is to keep moving you away from righteousness. And if you look at her dating history and you look at his dating history, this man has already been known to cheat on all of his girlfriends. And yet, this famed woman's intuition does not come into mind when she's like, all right, let me date him. And this is if I'm dumb to the entertainment industry, because I know they put these people together in order for them to break them up and say it was cheating. And then y'all get online with this, oh, black men don't protect us, black men can't stay loyal, that's why they go to white girls. And then this is why black women be like, no, this is why black men be like, oh, look at her, she twerking and showing her ass all over social media, we don't wife thoughts, you know, it was just his turn. Like, it goes back and forth, and people are defending celebrities in which they don't even know them and are not getting a Cash App or a Zelle from these celebrities when they defend them online. So it's really pointless, but I understand why the CIA and all these PSYOP programs are ran heavily on black relationships. I understand it. I do. If you want to stop a people from procreating righteousness, you keep giving them images and identities of false relationships so they would be at odds with one another. Because as I saw, like, people actually absorb whatever happens to these celebrities and their relationships. We absorb it and bring it into our household. So now it becomes a doctrine. It becomes a revolving door of whatever image, whatever identity, whatever relationship that's been spoon-fed in front of us, we take that into our relationships and use it as doctrine. And then we kick our men or kick our women out, or we cheat on our women or beat our women. It becomes, like I said, it becomes a revolving door that when children are born out of wedlock, born out of these situations, then you're just repeating the trauma, you're repeating the process, and you're building up the generational curses within your household. So Satan really don't have to do nothing. He don't have to do anything now. He can focus on what he really wanted to focus on, which is preparing this world for his arrival. So he set those wheels in motion early when it came to us, because he knew eventually we would be leaving slavery and you couldn't trotting us down anymore. And so you had to come at us with a different approach. He made us love sin. He made us love unrighteousness and wickedness. So being, if I was dumb to the entertainment industry, I would say that she was just stupid. Because why would you date somebody? One, he's a good player, but he's not the player on a team. He's not like a marquee player on a team. But this is one of the ways he is being risen through Prince Hall Freemasonry. He offered his identity to be one, to be the guy that cheats, which he cheats anyway. But he wanted to be front street with it. So now we'll watch after a couple of years, them putting magnets on the ball or magnets on the rim and watch him hit record numbers in order to shame Megan Thee Stallion. And then she'll come out with an album talking about him. So it'll be a back and forth thing. The same thing they get you Negroes with this whole Drake versus Kendrick Lamar. Like Willie Lynch said in his letters to the West Indies slave plantation owners, that you must put the black male versus the black woman. And you put the light-skinned male versus the dark-skinned male. He said, if you do it this way in guarding your plantations, this will be a never-ending doctrine. This would reverberate throughout generations if you do it this way. And it works. The CIA knows about the Willie Lynch papers. COINTELPRO never stopped. They know exactly what they're doing. And you Negroes fall for it. Y'all be getting online talking about, oh, y'all weren't acting like this when Kim Kardashian did this. Like, y'all do these little apple and orange false equivalency arguments where you pit one against the other, but you use the white person, you use white people as a bar of how to be treated or how to act. So if we don't go after Kim Kardashian because of what she done, why are you going after Megan Thee Stallion because of what she did? Or vice versa. That's how y'all make these little arguments. And you sound retarded online when you make these assessments, these think pieces based on the righteousness of white folk. They should never be the bar of what we do or how we treat each other. But yet, that's the bar. And it's usually a doctrine that's formulated by women to get them out of being accountable for something that really they shouldn't even be absorbing or even caring about. Like, how are you defending somebody who's dressed up as a devil, who twerks online all the time, that really should not give any type of respect, but they are being defended because they're defending a lifestyle. It's a lifestyle that they're going after. It's a lifestyle they want. It's a lifestyle that they want to feel validated in. That you can come online, shake your butt, and you're supposed to be respected by your man. You're supposed to know the difference between entertainment, having fun, and being respected as a woman across all social media platforms, which is why our women are all over the place sexually. That's why they are hypersexual. It's why they are looked at as animals now. Twerking on top of cars, twerking in the street on spring break, being naked online. Like, there's no reason why they go after your children, especially in these single parent households, because they know that you women fall for these images of these hood dudes, and you think you could turn a hood dude righteous, and then you have a baby by him, he leaves, and now you want to reclaim some vengeance against him to attract more men or to make him jealous to come back. So then you dress loosely, you act loosely, and then you just, and your children's watching you act like this, like you aren't home trained, and then you repeat the cycle for him or for her if you have a daughter. Like I said, Satan don't got to do as much work as he did in the days when the Israelites were righteous. He had to really work to get us to go into other religions. Now, not so much. He's focusing on other things. So I laugh when Negro Christians talking about, oh, I'm being attacked by the devil. Like, no, you ain't. You ain't being attacked by him. You're doing exactly what he wants you to do. Why would he attack you? Why? I mean, you're in a false religion that the people he controls created a false sun god for. And then he convinced you that the law, statutes, commandments are nailed to the cross, so you don't have to act righteously. And if you fall, stumble, the consequences of your actions, then you shouldn't worry about it because God knows your heart. And then you're so lucky because after you've done all these pagan holidays that the Most High talked against, you convinced yourself that you are still eligible for election when the rapture comes. Like I said, Satan ain't got to do as much work with y'all. CIA don't even have to do as much work. All they got to do is keep bringing up celebrity people that they own and put them with each other and then wait 4 or 5 months, say one or the other cheated or one or the other went into a domestic violence incident, break them up, and then watch y'all imitate this same type of behavior or energy in your relationships, and then you become heartbroken or single forever. Like I said, it's too easy. It's too easy to see too, but people don't want to see it. I wanted to talk about Jonah real quick, because there's one thing I was reading when I was doing a little Bible study with my family, was the fact that the Most High Yah really predicted program what Jonah was about to go through, but I don't think he understood it. Starting at verse 4, but Yahuwah sent out a great wind into the sea, and there was a mighty tempest in the sea, so that the ship was like to be broken. Then the mariners were afraid and cried, every man unto his Elohim, and cast forth the wares that were in the ship into the sea, to lighten it of them. But Jonah was gone down into the sides of the ship, and he lay and was fast asleep. So the shipmaster came to him and said unto him, what do you mean, O sleeper? Arise, call upon your Elohim, if it so be that Elohim will think upon us, that we perish not. Verse 12, and he said unto them, take me and cast me forth into the sea. So shall the sea be calm unto you, for I know that for my sake this great tempest is upon you. Nevertheless, the men rowed hard to bring it to the land, but they could not, for the sea wrought and was tempestuous against them. Wherefore they cried unto El Yahuwah. If you go back to verse 5, it says, then the mariners were afraid and cried, every man unto his Elohim. So they were already worshiping other gods before they got on the boat. They've lived their lives worshiping other gods. So when things got hard, they went to their false gods. Wherefore now they cried unto El Yahuwah and said, we beseech you, O Yahuwah, we beseech you. Let us not perish for this man's life and lay not upon his innocent blood. For you, O Yahuwah, have done as it pleased you. So they took up Jonah and cast him forth into the sea, and the sea ceased from her raging. Then the men feared Yahuwah exceedingly and offered a sacrifice unto Yahuwah and made vows. That's all it took. It took a near-death experience for these mariners to find out who the real, true Yahuwah was. And this is the reason why Jonah was sent to Nineveh, which is the capital of the Assyrians. This is the reason why he sent them there. He sent them to warn them. Because in the end of the book of Jonah, he says that, why are you mad? For people who don't know left from right. So obviously they didn't know of Yahuwah's righteousness, never heard of him, only known about the battles that happened between that nation and Yahuwah's nation. But they never known the Torah. They never known righteousness and uprightness. So if you tell them, maybe they'll stop. So Jonah was pissed off because he wanted to see the destruction. He said, why you send me over there to make myself an enemy among a people that do not know you, make me look crazy, and you were just going to forgive them anyway? But this is the mercy that the Most High shows. The Most High knew that when he sent Jonah, when Jonah fled, I guarantee you the Most High set it up to where Jonah was going to be picked up by men who were already idol worshipers to show Jonah that if these men can turn to me after a very stern warning, then the people I send you to be a warning for, why wouldn't you expect them to do the same thing? Why would you flee from that? I mean, if you read, Jonah was depressing. Jonah was truly depressing because he sat outside the city and wanted to see what was going to happen to it. And while he was sitting there, he was getting some shade. And the Most High sent the worm to eat up the foliage. Then he got upset, but he felt bad for the fact that he had no shade and mad at the worm. He said, well, why are you mad? What makes you have the right to be mad at one and not the other? Is it, I'm showing you, like, through my mercy, I'm repenting of what I was going to do because there are people there that actually listened to your warning. So you did exactly what I wanted you to do. I didn't say go over there and then sit back and watch me tear this whole country up or this whole city up. I knew in their hearts that once they heard your warning, I was going to repent from the evil I was going to do to them. The same thing with you. It's like I allowed you to go into that ship. I should have destroyed you for disobeying me. I allowed you to go down into that ship so you could serve as a witness and a testimony to men that there is one Yahuwah, that there is one God, and I am him. I wish Jonah would have understood that at the time. He could have looked at it as like, all right, these men obviously quickly turned from their gods to my God. Maybe the same thing could happen if I just warned the city of Nineveh that the Most High will give the same type of forgiveness and mercy after being long-suffering to a people who truly did not know Yahuwah at the time. I am a light to the other nations. I'm a witness and a testimony to our God. I think that's the beautiful aspect of the Most High's mercy, and especially when he sends you into certain circumstances. He's sending you, like it says, as sheep among wolves. He's sending you to be a light, a testimony, a witness to those who don't know him. A lot of us may have thought that we could run from Yahuwah. A lot of us have this escapism mentality that soon as things get hard or become troubled because of righteousness and uprightness, that we go back into our vices. And when we go back into our vices, we usually meet people thirsty for who Yahuwah is, just by our conversation, just by the way we are acting. I mean, we're not acting like dope fiends and alcoholics and crackheads, but it could be a situation where the Most High sends you to your favorite liquor store, and then from some random moment that scripture appears somewhere on a TV screen or in your heart or in your mind, and you see someone talking about it or it's just something, and then you end up exchanging words with somebody and you tell them the truth that you know in the midst of you searching for advice, in the midst of you searching for escapism or a way to get out of this wall. The Most High has a way of bringing you right back. And then you forget that you wanted to go get drunk. You forget that you want to fornicate. You forget that you want to smoke weed or do drugs or whatever. So you being a testimony and a witness could change somebody else's life. I feel like that's the whole point of the book of Jonah. He will put us with people who are unbelievers just so we could turn them into believers, because it's the way we walk, the things that happen around us. They knew exactly who was at fault as soon as he got to that boat and when it was rocky. I don't know why they didn't think to blame themselves, because they were worshiping false idols. Why didn't they say, oh man, this idol that I'm worshiping, this God that I worship, is not settling the storm? How about your God? Is your God settling the storm for us? Is he making it calm? No. How about your God? Is your God doing it? Well, go ask a man in the boat that's sleeping. See if he got a God. And that's when Jonah said, look, this came on my account. This is me. Just toss me in this water. Toss me in this water. So they was like, all right, we'll answer. We'll talk to your God then and see what will happen. And boom, And what did they do? What the first thing they did? First thing, offered a sacrifice unto Yahuwah. Because if they know that they offer sacrifices to their gods, the Most High did nothing but gave them a whole 180. He gave them a whole 180. Because the, not 180, but I say 360, because the first sacrifices and the first offerings happened with the children who were connected to Yahuwah first, which was Cain and Abel. And Adam and Eve, or Adam and Chua, they knew of offering sacrifices and offerings to Yahuwah first. So I knew throughout their bloodlines and their generations, they were still offering to the Most High Yahuwah. It's just man corrupted themselves. Like, well, I'm not hearing my God, and I don't even see the God that they're talking about, that they're offering to. I can just make up something that I can see. And that's what started this false idol worship. I'll just carve something of a God that controls water or controls the sky, controls the sun. And I'll offer so I can see him. I'll offer. So the Most High got them to change from their flesh into their Ruach. A brother wanted me to talk about or break down Romans chapter 8. Since we're talking about being carnal minded and we're talking about the flesh and worshiping idols. And Romans 8, I'll start to 1 through 8 is what I labeled carnal minded. There is therefore now no condemnation to them which are in Mashiach Yahushua, who walk not after the flesh, but after the Ruach. For the Torah of the Ruach Kayim, the Ruach of life, and Mashiach Yahushua has made me free from the law of sin and death. A lot of Christians twist these books up, especially Paul's words in Romans when he says this. Yahushua Mashiach has made me free from the law of sin and death. That means what he's saying is I'm not under the law, because once you have that Ruach HaKodesh, you don't have to worry about the commandment of don't steal, the commandment of don't murder, the commandment of not coveting, the commandment of not going into your neighbor's wife. Like, when you are in that Ruach HaKodesh, I don't have to worry about the law, statutes, commandments like that. I don't have to worry. I'm already obedient. The Ruach tells me, okay, this is a feast day. There's a sending smoke offering on this day. It tells you. It becomes a flow state. So when you're in that flow state and you're in connection with the Most High Yahuwah yourself, very strong connection, you don't have to worry about the law of, all right, if I go to this bar, I don't want to break the law of being drunk. I don't want to quench the Ruach by flirting if I'm already in a relationship. I don't want to commit adultery. Like, you don't have to worry. When you're in flow state of this Ruach HaKodesh, you don't worry about sins. You just don't. That's what he's saying here. He didn't say that Yahushua Mashiach came and took on sin and took on death and then so we could do whatever we want. No, he's saying that because he is perfect and he walked perfectly, we shall also walk perfectly. And that's what the Ruach HaKodesh allows us to do. It allows us to walk perfectly. For what was impossible under the law for the flesh to do, Yahuwah did in sending his own son in the likeness of sinful flesh. And for sin condemned sin in the flesh. So he's saying that Ruach, you cannot sin when you're in the Ruach. So Yahushua was made flesh. The Ruach HaKodesh was made, you could say the Ruach HaKodesh was made flesh. So we can know that flesh can defeat Satan or devil or the wickedness of the flesh. That's what he did. He bridged the gap between the Ruach and the flesh. That if you have the Ruach in this flesh, you can beat sin and beat death. That the righteousness of the Torah might be fulfilled in us who walk not after the flesh, but after the Ruach. This is the reason why I push these offerings so hard, because it's about walking after the Ruach. What did the Most High say? You have to serve me in spirit and in truth. In Ruach and in truth. If he says, go back to the ancient paths and walk therein, a Ruach is telling us to go back into him. It's not saying to deny it. He didn't say cut up the the books into Old and New Testament. It didn't say anything being nailed to the cross or fulfilled to do without. He said, with this Ruach I give you, walk in the paths that I have laid out that were successful to you or successful to the children you know that already are talked about and being in heaven. For they that are after the flesh do mind the things of the flesh, but they that are after the Ruach, the things of the Ruach. I love when the Most High told Ezra, he said, for the full things are for the full, and the empty things are for the empty. When you are doing works of the flesh, you are doing things that are empty. I talked about this in a couple of episodes ago when I said that when it comes to the Ruach in heaven, we don't need lawyers. There aren't going to be offices in heaven. There aren't going to be temp jobs in heaven. There ain't going to be actors and actresses in heaven. What I'm saying, I'm talking about as working. He's not going to need it. He's not going to need lawyers. He's not going to need plumbers. He's not going to need electricians. He's not going to need cashiers, bank tellers. You get my point. He's not going to need what we need to provide for our house or provide for clothes and provide for food. We ain't going to need those jobs. So the things that we are doing in this world are truly nothing. Absolutely nothing. Yes, you can feel good in building something, feel good in your career, yes. But at the end of the day, truly, at the end of the day, it provides nothing for the afterlife. Absolutely nothing. But the Ruach does. For to be carnally minded is death, but to be spiritually minded is life and peace. Being carnally minded is prime example of those two relationships. Klay Thompson and Megan Thee Stallion. Now, say you were dumb to symbolism, dumb to the fact that they're connected to Prinzhof Freemasonry, Satanism, Luciferianism, Zionism, Synagogue of Satan. If you take that out and you just look at it objectively as a relationship, being carnal minded is what led them together. If you read Sirach, a wicked woman is given to a wicked man. So if it's a man who's a habitual adulterer, he is going to be put with a woman who seeks after the same things, which is, if you are a woman and all you talk about is how good your coochie is, always whoring yourself out online or showing or propagating that your body is worth more than your mind or worth more than your Ruach, then you are put with a man who abuses that flesh, abuses those covenants of a righteous and upright relationship. Y'all put yourselves into this. Brothers and sisters, y'all put yourselves into this. I guarantee you, before you woke up, your mind of what your partner would be or how to act and how to dress came off that television. I guarantee you. You may say, no, it's by my own will and my own hand that I was attracted to this man or woman. You are a liar. I'm simply stating that you didn't know what you were attracted to until you were shown a magazine or you were shown TV or you were shown a music video or any movie that you've seen. You say, that's my type. I guarantee all of you did it. We all did it. Before we woke up, our type is what our eyes was latched onto, what was appealing to us. And then we would go through many of those personalities and identities in that one image, trying to force this righteous image with all these personalities that came with women who looked like that or men who looked like what we want. That's being carnal minded. I guarantee you, after you got your heart broke a couple of times and you came into this walk, now it's not even about looks anymore. It's about who's out here with the Ruach HaKodesh. Who's out here serving the Most High Yahuwah? That's what it should be. Your boundaries should start at, all right, this is what I want for us when it comes to spirituality. This is what I want for us as a covenant, a ketubah, when it comes to Yahuwah. That's what you really should be saying. Now, mind you, the Most High knows what you're attracted to. He knows what's going to keep you in line. And then when you search after him first, only he knows where all the seeds are planted. Only he does. He knows where the seeds are planted. Your seed, which is your significant other, your rib, could be somewhere next door, or could be getting ready to move, or you be getting ready to move to where that seed is planted. You don't know where it is. I was just lucky enough for mine was right next door, figuratively. Right next door. Right underneath my nose this whole time. But the Most High said, no, you are not ready for this until you go through this first. Then I will bring this person into your life. I didn't even have to go nowhere. Truly, I didn't. I was blessed enough to not even have to go nowhere. But some of y'all, you're set up for the journey. You're set up for the journey. And that's all based on if you get it or not. Because the carnal mind is enmity against Yahuwah, for it is not subject to the Torah of Yahuwah. Neither indeed can be. So if you're worrying about exceeding in your career, you're not thinking about the Most High Yahuwah, his statutes, his ordinances. If you're thinking about trying to accomplish a relationship or a marriage before actually knowing the Most High Yahuwah or serving him first, then you're just going to go into a relationship that's going to tear up your entire household financially, physically, and emotionally sometimes, and you'll be right back where you started, and you have to start right back over until you get it. But you can't be subject to the Torah because you're not thinking about, okay, I'm trying to choose a partner based off righteousness or uprightness or following the Torah. You're trying to base it upon what you liked as an image of a good relationship. And like I said again, that comes from television. It comes from media. What you dictate is a successful relationship. Social media has got a lot of people thinking the standard of relationships is people's highlights. People can formulate a whole doctrine of what a relationship's supposed to be based on people who post their highlights. So when they that are in the flesh cannot please Yahuwah, cannot please him at all. It don't matter how many times we have said, I thank you, Lord, Savior, Jesus Christ, at Thanksgiving, that was based on flesh. It don't matter about Christmas, the presents that we got, that we praise, that, oh, we thank God for all these Christmas gifts. He ain't listening to that. Does not please him. The same thing with Easter. It does not please him. Our birthdays, we give thanks to God for letting us go around the sun or the sun going around us another year. He don't care about that. We convince ourselves that he cares. Now, Romans 8, 11 through 19, I call it the Ruach of life. But if the Ruach of him that raised up Yahushua from the dead dwell in you, he that raised up Mashiach from the dead shall also quicken your mortal bodies by his Ruach that dwells in you. Therefore, brethren, we are debtors, not to the flesh, to live after the flesh. So if Yahushua died for us so that we may understand the Ruach after the flesh, then we are owed, because we couldn't have done this ourselves. We can't bring ourselves back to life. We can't defeat death and sin by doing things whatever we wanted to do or however we wanted to do them. If we walked as Yahushua walked, then we are payment for the life after the flesh, because we didn't create life after the flesh ourselves. So we really truly need to humble ourselves and understand that it's not that hard to truly walk after the Ruach HaKodesh, especially after this world is being exposed so fast, so quickly, that it makes you sick of it. Now, mind you, if this was like in the 90s, a lot of us would be struggling to leave that world alone, because everything was great in the 90s. I would say 90s, early 2000s, even into the 80s for some of you. Some of you seasoned folk. But it was good. I mean, we weren't attached to social media because there was no social media. We weren't attached to phones because there were no phones like that, really. What we saw out there in the world is what we saw. We formulated great relationships because they were based on genuine interest and not following people online. When we had fun, we were in the moment of having fun. We didn't care about nothing. We felt absolutely no pressure, no pain, no judgment, no disobedience. And even television shows or programs really didn't hit as far as fear. And there wasn't diseases passed around, no lockdowns. It was just different at that time. So if the Most High came and said, all right, y'all need to be waking up, he would have struggled with that generation if he woke us up in the 90s, because it was just too good. It was just too good. But now, because he's pushing time faster, everything is being exposed faster, so it can help you come out of the world quicker. So it's no excuse why you didn't see this happening, that happening, because it's all happening within weeks of each other instead of years and decades from each other. For if ye live after the flesh, ye shall die. But if ye through the Ruach do mortify the deeds of the body, ye shall live. That is the toughest part, I think, for a lot of us, is trying to mortify the deeds of the body. Because it's not just, smoking weed, drinking, doing drugs, going out and partying. Sometimes it's anger. Sometimes it's not being there consistently. Sometimes it's neglect. Sometimes it's being spiteful or wrathful. That comes into it too. You have to kill that part of yourself. And it's not like those situations keep coming back up, the same situations where you're just like, all right, I know not to get mad at this, mad at this topic, because now I've beaten it so many times. No, it comes in different variations. That's one thing Satan is good at. There is 400 different variations of the same sin, but it's repackaged in a way where if you deny one, you'd be like, all right, I've beaten this, but it comes in a different package each time. Until you really sought it out and be like, okay, I know now it's connected to this. It's all connected. But when we were in our ignorance, we didn't understand that. And the only way I could make it make sense is through your dating history. Because the image of you want of a relationship, you'd be like, all right, I want this particular type of person. So what you would deal with is different personalities of the same type of person that you like being around. It's almost like if you were a person who loves soda, say you love Sprite. So if you love Sprite, then your next person that you would love would be 7-Up. And the next person after 7-Up would be Starry. and you see what I'm getting from that? It's the same particular type of brand. It's the same type of Sprite. But you would go down that line with the same soda in different labels and thinking that you are growing, or you're going to one day accomplish a wife out of the same tasting soda in different brands. It's not going to ever happen. You truly have to rework your entire mental to understand that. For ye have not received the Ruach of bondage again to fear, but ye have received the Ruach Emots, the spirit of adoption, whereby we cry, Abba, Father. Again, this goes back to what I talked about in the previous show about fear. For ye have not received the Ruach of bondage again to fear. So we're not bound by our sins. We're not bound by the flesh. We're not bound by this world. Back in the day when they didn't know what will happen to you if you died, everybody was YOLOing up. Everybody's like, oh, we only lived this once. We don't have no example of anything happening to us after life. There's no one has ever come back from after death and said, all right, if you act this way, you could achieve life after death. No one knew it before the time of Yahusha. And I'm talking about way, way, way before the time of Yahusha. So everybody was acting out the way they wanted to act out. It's like, oh, well, if this nation over here is not getting judged and we getting judged somehow, let's go to their God. And maybe their God allows them to act how they want. So that's why the Israelites kept jumping into other nations' religions, because they saw those nations across the street having a good old time, having sex in the street, going down by the river 4 times out of the year, having sex with another person's daughter, another person's wife. And this is what they did in Sodom and Gomorrah, if you read the book, I think, Yasher or Jubilees, that's in. Just having a good old time. And yet no one's judging them. So why can't we act like that? We only gonna live this life once. We might as well get it out of our system, and if we can come back to the God that we want, we can come back. Or if the God that they're allowed to do this with, maybe that God is protecting them, and that God is more powerful than our God. Because if our God is only allowing us to be destroyed from unrighteousness and wickedness and allowing them to succeed, then we are following the wrong God. So that's what it means not to be bound by fear, bound by the unknown, because the Most High has laid out the unknown for us. If you do this, this is where you will be. You don't have to worry about a home after death. In my Father's house, there are many mansions. He ain't say huts. He ain't say booths or sukkahs. He ain't say mangers. He said mansions. What you see Hollywood give their minions, the people that worship Satan, where do you think Satan got the idea of putting his people in mansions? Where do you think he got that idea from? Like, Rick Ross has not sold an album, I don't know how long. He has never sold anything that was like a platinum or diamond status, like Usher's album hit diamond status. Rick Ross has done nothing consistently. How can he afford that mansion in Florida that he's living in? Because he's worshiping as a Prince Hall Freemason, as a Luciferian to Satan. He's doing exactly what he's called to do, to be an image, to be a lifestyle. No one's going to follow broke rappers. No one's going to follow people who can't pay rent. It's going to make it seem like being on a platform, being an artist, being a musician, it's not all that it's cracked up to be. So why would I want to keep giving my soul to something that I'm not going to get anything out of? So he has to put them in places. A lot of these artists don't have money. They're just telling you that they do. But the way they act, it doesn't seem like they have money. Like, for instance, Jay-Z is supposed to be a billionaire, yet he's gone through two 360 deals. And if anybody known about 360 deals, it's a financially compromising, debt-slaved deal. Kanye made it a whole thing, I think, when he would start this fake false awakening where he talks about 360 deals. It don't really pay you. They give you money and they take money out of your touring. They take money out of your performances. They take money out of your music. Anywhere that they invested in you as an identity, as an image, they take a piece of. So you trying to tell me a billionaire can't own his own publishing? He can't own his own streaming services to produce his own music? They don't even make mixtapes no more. Remember how they used to give away free raps? They don't even do that anymore. Because now, these 360 deals, they're going to take a piece of everything. Oh, you're going to sell a mixtape online for $15? As a record company, I should get a piece of that. You're using my artist. And that's what they do. They chokeholding artists for them to not do anything. So that means if they can't do anything and it's all based on money, their image and identity or personality is also owned. You can see how they do it. Every time they need money from whatever community they're going after, they come up with some drama. It's always like that now. Now it's drama. It's a narrative before they have a concert or before they release an album. They have to drum up controversy. And it's not organic anymore. It really isn't. These people don't even get to be real people to sell you that there are down-to-earth personalities. They don't. Because they have to always keep them in a revolving wheel of wickedness. They can't have time to think. They have to always be focused on unrighteousness and wickedness. It's the same thing with the flesh that they're trying to imitate with the Ruach HaKodesh. When you're in that Ruach HaKodesh, you're not thinking about being carnal-minded. And when you are carnal-minded, you're not thinking about the Ruach HaKodesh. So you constantly have to keep doing work to stay in one of the two extremes. Now, that Ruach HaKodesh, the work is doing these feast days. The work is every Shabbat you should be offering. Every Shabbat. And in the middle of that, you do a peace offering, a drink offering, a goodwill offering. That was the work. That's what kept you, I said this before, this was what kept you focused. Like, if you are a person that can't stop masturbating, you know eventually, if you are doing the real ordinances of the Shabbat, from the time that you masturbated, you know that you eventually have to see if the Most High is going to accept your offering from your hand after you've been gooning all day. Your mind is attached to porn. So by the time you get to the seventh day and you offer, the Most High is not going to accept it from your hand. Because, you know, the week after that or the week after that, you're going to be back to gooning again. So you spending your money for an offering that's going to be rejected because you have your meat in your hand. You offering a different type of meat. Not to be funny, but yes. So that's what's in your mind first before you offer. So why would he accept it? So it really clears you up, not just with masturbating, with doing drugs, with getting high, and then also you have to offering and you offering high. He's not going to accept it. The same thing with fornicating. If you go to a girl's house or go to a man's house and then come back to your house and then 3 or 4 days later, you have to offer, he ain't going to accept it because your heart not right. So what these ordinances and statutes do is to always keep you in the mind frame of being in the Ruach and not be carnal minded. So if you look at it from Satan's aspect, he has to keep his minions always in wickedness. They have to always, that's why when I see Megan Thee Stallion always twerking online, always showing her butt, they have to keep that going. That's the work that she chose to sell her soul for, is to keep it going. There can never be no righteousness, no breaks to make you start thinking of like, damn, do I really look stupid doing this? Do I really look foolish? They don't give you time to think. Flesh doesn't give you time. It just makes you jump to the next thing. And y'all imitate that. I'm not saying y'all, all of y'all, but I'm saying people imitate. So when they do something foolish or dumb, they don't lie with the shame and the repentance needed for their Ruach to clean themselves of what they've done. They jump to the next thing. That's why so many people defend celebrities, because they're defending an image and lifestyle online that they are adhering to. It's like defending a doctrine or defending a religion. You need this person to be successful in doing this. You don't need them to be attacked, because if they attack the image and personality, it's almost like they're attacking you. So that's why so many people defend celebrities online. That's why I laugh at it. I used to try to argue it, but I'm like, these people are, they're in a religion. They're in a cult. There's nothing that's going to get them out this cult except real life situation and consequences. When they really truly find out that following after a personality is not going to be conducive to the lifestyle you need to be protected in these end times, all right. You gotta let people go through these situations that life calls for the consequences to show up at their front door. You gotta let them have it. Where was I? Oh. The Ruach itself bears witness with our Ruach, and that we are children of Yahuwah. And if children, then heirs of Yahuwah, and joint heirs with Mashiach, if so be that we suffer with him, that we may be also glorified together. For I reckon that the sufferings of this present time are not worthy to be compared with the glory which shall be revealed in us. That is beautiful. For I reckon that the sufferings of this present time, what is the sufferings that we will go through? Maybe not being able to pay rent on time, or rent at all, or evicted. Not being able to have food when we want it. May not be able to provide clothing on our back or roof over our head. Still cannot be compared to the glory, because it's done for a purpose. I said this before, the Most High is not going to suffer his children who are doing it the right way, who are relying on him, to truly suffer and lose everything and not have the redemption and salvation that comes with being obedient unto him. It doesn't make sense to me. Why would he destroy us if we're doing everything he wants us to do for him? Now, he may try us based on certain things that's in our Ruach that we may not know. They say it's easy for us to trust him when everything is going good. When things go bad, that is where our faith in him is tested. There's nothing wrong with that, because we don't know how situations come and go out of this world. We don't have control of that. The Most High is not going to completely do away with, you know, the trials and tribulations of proving your faith just so you could feel good for the rest of your entire life. It's not like that. What he's saying is, I gave you a heart to not fear. I gave you the Torah. I gave you righteousness. I gave you the Ruach HaKodesh. I gave you examples of men that when they were in tough situations succeeded because I was with them and because they had faith in me. Some of us will never, ever be put on a hot pan with fire around about us with up to 1,000 degrees of heat. Some of us may never, ever go through that. Some of us will never, ever be put in a den full of lions or full of snakes or full of poison. Some of us will never go through that. Yet Daniel is a sign, an example, that even in the toughest and harshest situations, not only would you be saved, but your enemies that threw you in there will get their tails in there and be eaten up by the same devices they tried to destroy you with. That is an example. For the earnest expectation of the creature waits for the manifestations of the sons of Yahuwah. Now 20 through 27 are called hope. For the creature was made subject to vanity, not willingly, but by the reason of him who has subjected the same in hope. Because the creature itself also shall be delivered from the bondage of corruption into the glorious liberty of the children of Yahuwah. For we know that the whole creation groans and travails and pain together until now. And not only they, but ourselves also, which have the first fruits of the Ruach, even we ourselves groan within ourselves, waiting for the adoption, to wit, the redemption of our body. For we are saved by hope, but hope that is seen is not hope. For what a man sees, why does he yet hope for? If you are given an image of God, whatever image that you carve into your mind, why do you need to hope to be saved? If you have made this image yourself and made the doctrines that go along with having a false idols. Now you take the gods Chemosh, Dagon, Baal, they got to see those gods. So why would they hope to see him or hope that he exists if it's already proven that he exists in a form that does not smell, eat, breathe, walk, or save? I guarantee you they probably said, I never hope Baal. I hope Baal does this, does that, does this. Because people already knew what these idols were able to do and not do. They knew it, which is why they divided these idols up to have different parts of creation. Oh, this one guards the sun. This one guards the sky. This one guards the animals. This one guards love. If you look at all these idols that people created, they knew these idols weren't that powerful. But they had one idol for one particular thing in hopes that one particular thing could be given to them. If you look at the Native American, I don't know why people think the Native Americans are Israelites. It's just weird to me because they do the same thing the Egyptians do. And the Egyptians are Hamites. And the Hamites were dispersed across the countries. So what you see as far as the Native Americans are Hamites mingled in with the blood of Yafet. Some of them. Not all of them. Some of them. And they worship the eagle. They worship birds, the sky, buffalo, and all this. But they never had a one true because they know. They don't understand that power. They don't know what that is. But things that they could see, why would they hope for it? Why would they hope to see a visitation from the Most High Yahuwah when they made it with their hands? Or when they could see it in the sky? Or they could see it on land? Why would they need a hope? And not only, let me see. But if we hope for that we see not, then do we with patience wait for it. Now, he said that his father has many mansions. I have not seen these mansions, but I hope to see it. With patience, I'm going to hope to see it. The same thing with the second Exodus. I don't know what the second Exodus would look like. There is no like futuristic hologram or time machine where I could be like, oh, this is what's going to look like. So I know exactly when it's going to happen, how it's going to happen, where it's going to happen, and know where we're going to. So I don't have to hope for anything. So I don't have to depend on anything because I already know the situation, which is why I think the Most High has kept certain things from us. When he says to the prophets, when one of the prophets said that we prophesy in part, there's a reason for that. If he told you almost everything to its very finite detail, why would you hope for his visitation? Why would you hope for Yahushua to come back? Why would you hope that you will be saved? Why would you hope if you knew everything? This is, I think, one of the problems of the Garden of Eden. She wanted to know and be like God. And that's when the Most High said, all right, I need to cut off what they know. I can't tell them everything. Because if I tell them everything, they will think that they won't need me. So they will never hope for anything. They will just see it as this life is mundane. It's all scheduled. It's all programmed that we don't have no say-so. So we don't do nothing. So we might as well sit still. I think that would be the dangers of knowing too much. The Most High created us because he wanted us to feel that Ruach. He wanted us to use him through the obedience to his Torah. Like I said, it's his world. Truly, it's his world. He can do whatever he wants to do. If he wanted us to be wicked, unrighteous, and to have a free fall, to do what thou wilt, he could have done that. But we are so lucky that we don't have a God like this, because none of us would survive. Can you imagine you having a really good life and having a really good time and someone just for no reason at all, none whatsoever, comes up and belts you in the head or takes a shovel to your face or goes to your house, drag your children out and have their way with them? You know how blessed we are that he did not allow wickedness and unrighteousness to truly reign without a leash on it? We are truly blessed for that. This is why we came back into obedience, because we know we don't defend, and we can't defend ourselves because we don't know who's around us. Some of y'all don't even understand. Y'all have murderers that have been looking at y'all for a minute. And I know I'm being overly dramatic with that, but it could be a possibility. Some of you don't even know you have people sitting next to you that wanted to swing on you. Some of y'all don't even know you have friends right now that waiting for you to go down so they can take advantage of your stumbling block. Y'all don't even know. There's people that y'all sleep with, share a bed with, that's been plotting on your demise and you don't even know it. And the only thing that's saving you right now or pulling you away from situations is the Most High has a calling for you. That's the only way. That's the only way most of us are saved. And I say most of us and then few of us at the same time. There's a reason why some people are called out as an assembly and why certain evils do not touch us. It's because we've been called for his purpose. Likewise, the Ruach also helps our infirmities, for we know not that we should pray for as we ought, but the Ruach itself makes intercession for us with the groanings which cannot be uttered. And he that searches the hearts knows what the mind of the Ruach is, because he makes intercession for the Kodeshim according to the will of Yahuwah, his will. We groan, we complain, we murmur under our breath or to ourselves or even in our prayers. The Most High understands our groanings. But those groanings will be taken away based upon his will. And we'll find out if our groanings are carnal minded or if our groanings is from the Ruach. For an example, if I wanted to really know something, if I really wanted to know where a certain biblical town was that I just can't find it on these maps, that is a certain groaning for the Ruach of wanting to know. And the Most High will bring me into some section of a map, like, oh, you forgot about this location and this is where it's at. That is what the Ruach is for. Now, if you ever grown up like, I got to get up and go to work. Like, I don't have money for sending smoke offerings. Like, what should I do? Like, I can't do it. I can't build the altar, blah, blah, blah. You know, and being that carnal minded, and he's not paying attention to that. Because he has he has given you the Ruach of joy. He's given you some mercy and long suffering to do it right. But if you moaning, murmuring, crying under your breath against him, don't expect for your situation to ever change. That's why I say he searches the heart and knows what the mind of the Ruach is. 28 through 39, this one I called Love Of. And we know that all things work together for good to them that love Yahuwah. Exactly what I was just talking about earlier. And we know that all things work together for good to them that love Yahuwah, to them who are the called according to his purpose. Blessed are you guys that you have a calling, you have a purpose. Maybe some of you don't know what it is now, but you will when things start to shake, you'll start to understand your purpose. Shout out to my brother Alexander Long. He found his purpose when he listened to this show enough. He's like, all right, I'm tired of just giving out one hitter quitter information. I'm going to do my own podcast and I'm going to talk about the information I found. And that's what I said many times on this show, that once you guys find your calling, you will be able to leave this show and leave whatever teacher is teaching you and go do your own thing. Then you become a teacher. That's exactly what the Ruach HaKodesh is designed for. You just needed a little bit of push. And everybody needs a little bit of push from now and again to fulfill their purpose. So I'm glad he's able to get and start his own podcast, because he's done the searching, he's done the investigating, he's done the necessary things to appease Yahuwah, and now he's going to start his journey with that. For whom he did foreknow, he also did predetermine to be conformed to the image of his son, that he might be the firstborn among many brethren. Moreover, whom he did predetermine, them he also called, and whom he called, he also justified, and whom he justified, them he also glorified. I'll go back and read that again. Moreover, whom he did predetermine, them he also called, them he also called, and whom he called, them he also justified, whom he justified, then he also glorified. So the Most High is not calling you for a purpose, his purpose, in order to destroy you. He is calling you, and he predetermined to call you at a specific time in this narrative, on this timeline, in this world, to justify you and to glorify you by going through certain trials and tribulations needed to prove your faith. What shall we say when say to these things, if Yahuwah be for us, who can be against us? He that spared not his own son, but delivered him up for us all, how shall he not with him also freely give us all things? So if we are one with Yahushua HaMashiach, and we are walking and trying to walk as perfectly as he walked, then he will give us anything that we ask for, because we now are becoming one with his son. And people used to say, well, atheists say this, when it comes to Abraham sacrificing his son and Yahuwah sacrificing Yahushua. They say this as a form of, why serve the Most High Yahuwah? They're like, what kind of God would you serve if he asked a blood sacrificing of a man who had to wait all his life for his own son? And what kind of God do you serve when you serve a God who willingly sacrificed his son instead of just killing Satan or the devil and be done with it? And people don't understand how the Most High sees it. If I'm a father, I know I can give my son life after death, then I would want my son to be an image or a light to other people to know that there is life, there is a possibility a true possibility of life after the after death. If you do it the way I want you to do it, you can achieve this paradise. So if I know I have the power to raise up my own son, it really isn't nothing for me to offer him for the rest of the world. If he knew before Abraham came into this world that this man would be righteous, then it's not no big feat that when he asked Abraham to sacrifice his son on Mount Moriah, that he knew that he was going to do it. He knew in his heart he was going to do it to be obedient to Yahuwah, which is why Yahuwah gave him that test. Again, if I can see the beginning, if I can see the end from the beginning, I could mess around with Satan all day if I wanted to. But we only know two or three examples of them doing this, of Satan testing his children. If I know from the beginning what their life will be, because the book of Enoch describes everything that's going to happen to this world. So if Enoch knows and sees it, I know the Most High Yahuwah has already seen it. So the trials and tribulations we are put in, the reason why we are put in them is because we can succeed them. We can beat them. We don't know that yet because we have to go through it to prove it to ourselves. The Most High knows what we are capable of. That's why that verse says that he will not put a burden on us that we cannot carry, because he knows what we can carry. He knows the weight in which our backs, our knees will buckle. He knows the pressure that we will be under. He will give us just enough for us to turn. Some of you needed to have a stroke in order to turn to him. Some of you may need to have a heart attack to turn from him. Like Jonah, he needed to be thrown into the water and swallowed up by a fish in order to turn and be about Yahuwah. It could be a fight breakout next to you and people get shot and you turn to Yahuwah. Some of you came from a tragic accident or some trauma that made you turn to Yahuwah. But again, he put you in that situation and let you go through that situation because he knew that one, you would face it, two, overcome it, and three, find him. Who shall lay anything to the charge of Yahuwah's elect? It is Yahuwah that justifies. Who is he who condemns? It is Yahushua HaMashiach that died, yet rather that is risen again, who is even at the right hand of Yahuwah, who also makes intercession for us. Who shall separate us from the love of Mashiach? Shall tribulation or distress or persecution or famine or nakedness or peril or sword? As it is written, for you, for your sake, we are all killed. All the day long, we are counted as sheep for the slaughter. Nay, in all these things, we are more than conquerors through him that loved us. For I am persuaded that neither death, nor life, nor angels, nor principalities, nor powers, nor things present, nor things to come, nor height, nor depth, nor any creature shall be able to separate us from the love of Yahuwah, which is in Mashiach Yahusha, our Adonai. A lot of people who fear this world, fear the people around them, fear circumstances, fear not understanding the unknown. If you read that last part, it should be nothing. Nothing, really, truly, in this world that should ever surprise us, that will ever make us have any type of amazement or fear or excitement towards it to separate us from the love of Yahuwah and Yahushua HaMashiach. Absolutely none. When you put it in that perspective, this man got beaten, embarrassed, spit on, hit in the face, strung up, been served some unholy liquid, vinegar, on a apparatus or on a thing that they used to wipe their butts with. Back in Roman days, they had a stick and they put a sponge on it. So when you took a poop, you took the stick and the sponge and you dumped it in the thing of vinegar. Then you wiped your butt with it and you put it back in the vinegar for the next person to use. That's what they did in Roman times. So when the Romans gone into Yerushalayim and they had a bucket next and nearby, that's exactly the stick and sponge that they used. And I am not saying that this was the same stick and sponge from somebody's toilet, but I'm saying they made the same type of apparatus that people wipe their butts with. So when they stuck that stick with the sponge into the thing to put it to his mouth, because he was thirsty, that's what they gave him. He went through all of that. And not to go through all of that, to you to be scared of what goes on in this world. Absolutely nothing. Absolutely nothing. If the man has proven that he can beat death and beat sin, there's really nothing you should care about in this world that should ever scare you away from the love of Yahuwah and Yahusha. Because he didn't have to do it. That's my whole thing. He didn't have to do it. If anything, it could have been even more strict that none of us would have been able to meet that standard or meet that bar. All he's saying is reject this world for the world to come, for the world I truly created, for those who are worthy of it. He could have made that road even more narrower. Just like he saved 8 souls from amongst, I don't know what that number could have been before the flood. We don't know. It could have been the millions. It could have been 100,000 people. We don't know. But we know 8 people is a very small number, a very few number. And even when there's 8 billion people in this world, he's only saving 144,000 Israelites from 12,000 from each tribe. That means in America, if it's like 300 million people in this country, the 12,000 from Yehuda, and I'm not even talking just about America, I'm talking about the islands like Dominican Republic, Haiti, Jamaica, 12,000 from this side, that's still so small of a number of who's going to be protected from said perils. The rest of us going to have to be swinging. So he didn't have to do it. Truly, he don't have to do it. It could have been one. He could have said, I'm taking one person from each tribe. Y'all have at it. Y'all see how zealous you're going to be for me. He's gracious enough, merciful enough, long-suffering enough to make sure we get it right before that election process. And even if we get swallowed up by this world, we are still owed everlasting life. That's why Yahusha said, the first will be last, the last will be first. So it don't matter how special you think you are, how much more in this walk you've been, or how many smoke offerings or feast days that you've done, you're going to get the same rite of passage for somebody who just learned about feast days yesterday. So start your journey ASAP.